is Wednesday on Daily Delivery. Michael Rand here. Glad to be back for another day. Hope everyone's having a good day out there today. A little windy, right? Woke up, wind's whipping around. Maybe it'll be blowing out to left field on Thursday. See if that wind keeps up for the Twins' home opener tomorrow. They could use it. Twins' bats not really going strong right now. We'll get to that in a little bit on today's show. Chip Scoggins also joins me today. That'll be in a little bit as well. Going to talk basketball, college sports, women's basketball, name, image, likeness. I know we've talked about that a couple times before, but it feels particularly acute right now with everything going on with the men's basketball program at the U. All the players entering the portal, maybe some of them seeking more NIL, different places, just kind of the era we are in college sports. We need to readdress that, and Chip is just the guy to do that. So we'll get into that with Chip. We'll also get into the terrific Monday night region finals in the women's basketball and how that sets up a Friday UConn versus Iowa that should be spectacular in the women's game in the Final Four. So Chip and I will talk about that in just a little bit. First, though, what did I miss? We're gonna focus on three games from Tuesday, and some concerning numbers, some concerning trends from all three of those games. Like I mentioned, we'll get to the Twins here in a sec. Let's go get to the Wild. Let's start with the Wolves. They beat the Rockets Tuesday. That is not a concern. It was a good overall win for the Wolves. They played solid. The Rockets have been red hot. They had that long winning streak that just got snapped the other day. They're trying to get up into the play-in. They're a couple games behind Golden State now in the play-in, so it's going to be hard for them to make up all that ground the rest of the year. But that's a good team. It's a quality win against a good team, a team that's been surging, a team that has a lot to play for. 113-106, got a little dicey at the end. It was like a 15-point lead that got trimmed down to one, but they made the winning plays at the end. Anthony Edwards made some of those winning plays at the end, a couple emphatic dunks towards the end, one on a fast break, one just in an off half-court set, both of them coming off of steals, if I do believe. So the defense tightened up at the end, got the job done, got the game to the finish line. The concern I have, and it's a minor concern, this is just kind of like a trend line in the middle of the season, but Anthony Edwards, 0-for-19 on three-pointers in his last three games. And, you know, after the game, he's like, don't worry about it, my shot will be fine once we get to the playoffs, things like that, and I do believe him, but that is one thing that against better teams, now Houston's a good team, but against a better team, against a playoff team, you cannot have Anthony Edwards enter the playoffs in a shooting slump. He's got time to get out of it. I know it. The bright lights come on. I'm not saying I'm worried about it. I'm saying that is weird. 0-for-19. That is a bad shooting slump. To not make a three over the span of those games, to keep shooting it six or seven times a game, and to see it not go through the hoop. And it just goes to show Ant is not a pure shooter. He's a good enough three-point shooter. He's a streaky, confident three-point shooter, but he is not a pure three-point shooter. He can't necessarily just shoot his way out of this slump. So watch that. I'm assuming it might even break out of it tonight. They play again tonight. Might even break out of it tonight. Then we're not worried about it anymore. Certainly better for this to happen than games 1 through 3 of the Western Conference first round of the playoffs. So just something to watch, how he's been struggling from three lately. Watch that the rest of the year. You want to see him out of that slump before the playoffs begin. And by the way, the Wolves have officially qualified for the playoffs, guaranteed of no worse than a top six finish. But again, they are hoping for bigger and better things. They are tied with Oklahoma City, a half game back of Denver, atop the Western standings. The Wolves do have tiebreakers against both those teams, although Denver does look to have the more favorable schedule. The Wolves and Denver play one more time this year, in which a game that could, in fact, determine home court in the Western Conference playoffs. We'll see about that. Next concern, the Twins. 2-2 this year. That's fine, right? You know, it's not where you want to be, but 2-2, no reason for panic. They won their first two, got blown out the other day, and then lost a close one yesterday, 3-2 to the Brewers. Couple concerns, I guess. Number one, the offense hasn't been going like they would hope it would be. Here's Rocco Baldelli on how they swung the bats in that 3-2 loss against Milwaukee.
not a great day offensively for us. We did have a few swings, and it felt like when we did put good swings on the ball, they made some plays. And Buxton had two excellent swings. And, you know, we had a couple of others maybe, but certainly not enough. You know, some of those balls that we put into play, some of those are going to find some holes, I think, at some point. And, you know, we got a couple doubles, then we're sitting there happy and something's going on. But we needed to do more offensively. With the way that we play sometimes and early in the season and the way that they play, it's not surprising to see a, you know, good, well-pitched, low-scoring game right there. But when we do hit the ball in the barrel, we want to get something out of it. I think we could have had better at-bats, though.
Their home run leader this year is Royce Lewis, a guy who's been on the injured list, who's been out of the lineup since the third inning of game one. He hit a home run in the first inning of the first game this season. They have not homered since then. He is their home run leader. So the offense just not really clicking. I know it's early, right? The games aren't as, it's not as warm out in a lot of these places, although there was climate control inside the Brewer Stadium on Tuesday. So four games in, that's what, 1/40th of a baseball season. If this was an NFL season and we were 1/40th of the way in, wouldn't even be halftime of the first game yet. So we're not panicking. We're not saying, oh my gosh, well, what's going to happen? They got to go trade somebody, bench everybody, change the lineup. Not saying that, but I am saying if this was supposed to be the strength of this year's team, if this was supposed to be the better or at least the equally good part of this team with the pitching staff, and the pitching staff carried them a lot of last year, if this was supposed to pick up some of the slack for missing some of those, you know, really good starting pitchers that they lost this past year, Sonny Gray, even Kenta Maeda, I put him in that category, guys that you could depend on in the rotation, if they were supposed to be picking up the slack with the offense, that is a concern right now. Again, just a concern, not reason for calamity. This, too, though, is concerning. And again, I want to be a downer here. I'm just saying, like, these are things that I look at, and I'm like, that's not the trend line you want to start the year. Pablo Lopez, great in the first start, gives them a ton of innings. He's going to give them innings all year. Joe Ryan, solid in the next start, but it goes 5 1/3. Again, it's early in the year. I know pitchers aren't stretched out. They're not going to go as long as they usually do. But 5 1/3 for Joe Ryan in the second start. Bailey Ober doesn't even get out of the second inning in their third game. And then Louis Varland only goes 4 yesterday, gives up 3 runs, needs 89 pitches to get through those 4 innings. So again, their starters have gone basically like 11 innings in the last 3 games. Again, early in the year, starters aren't stretched out as much. They're probably not going to go as deep anyway, but you don't want to get into this trend where you're having to work your bullpen so much. That was something they did so well last year. The starters were leading the league in innings for a long time, and I know they finished way up there. I don't know if they finished top or where they finished, but they were way up there at the end of the year in terms of starters innings pitched, starters strikeouts, things like that. They were a very good starting staff last year, and some of that was health. Some of that was just the quality of the pitchers. A lot of veterans, a lot of guys who you knew what you were going to get. Sonny Gray, like I said, Kenta Maeda, guys like that to go with Pablo Lopez, and then you supplemented that with Joe Ryan and Bailey Ober for most of the year. They don't quite have that this year, and that's a concern. That was a concern going into the year. You'd like to see a good start from Chris Paddock today. You'd like to see them, you know, be able to, you know, get a little bit more innings, although he's probably going to be on a little bit of a restriction himself. So got to watch that as the year goes on. Can they avoid overtaxing their bullpen? Can they get better starts, more consistently working deep into the games as the season goes along? I am watching that. Now, final game, the Wild won last night. They've actually been playing pretty well. That's the shame of all this, because this is the final number I'm looking at. The shame of all of where they are right now, which is 3.8% chance of making the postseason. That's according to Hockey Reference, 3.8% chance. The shame of all this is they've actually been playing really pretty good hockey since the All-Star break. They're 15-5-5 since the break. If they've been playing at that clip all season long, while Dean Evason wouldn't have gotten fired, they would be talking about going to the playoffs again. They probably aren't right now, even after last night's win. A good, solid win last night. They're still battling. They're still competing. It's not all about the playoffs. Some of it's laying the groundwork for next year. I get that. But right now, it's looking like they're just running out of time. They don't have enough time to make up the gap that they have. Nobody above them is stumbling enough for them to catch them. And so it's just going to kind of the season is just going to kind of wind down. Eventually, I'm sure they're probably just going to become eliminated. Not like a massive disappointment of a year. It kind of feels like this is the team they are, but You know, if they'd been playing at this clip, if they'd been playing at this well for the entire season, we'd be talking about the playoffs again. And I think just that slow start, some of that malaise and those injuries that hit them kind of mid-year, that's really dooming them right now, even though they are playing much better hockey as of late.
MGM Wine and Spirits is the choice for savings, service, and a great selection of spirits, pre-mixed cocktails, wines, and of course, ice-cold beers and hard seltzers. With over 30 locations throughout the Twin Cities and beyond, there's an MGM near you. Head to mgmwineandspirits.com to find a convenient location in your area. Get social. Follow MGM on Facebook and Instagram for all the latest news and trends. Make great moments with MGM Wine and Spirits, your locally owned and operated choice for over 50 years. Save time, save money. Shop MGM.
Let's bring in Star Tribune columnist Chip Scoggins right now to talk college sports, college basketball, the good and the bad. Chip, you wrote a column over the weekend. I referenced it actually in something I wrote on Tuesday about the landscape of college sports right now. This is not a brand new subject. We've talked about this before. Patrick Royce and I talk about this. Marcus Fuller and I talk about this, but it felt like it was just a fresh wound kick. I don't know what it is, but like it feels more focused and a little bit more personal, hits closer to home when all these Gophers players leave or they haven't left yet, but they say they're going into the transfer portal after a year of improvement under Ben Johnson. Again, they're not a Final Four team, but they went a second round of the NIT. They're a much better team. They're talking about, hey, if we all stay together, we could be a pretty good team. Next thing you know, it's all falling apart again. How are you supposed to be a fan of college sports right now, especially big time men's college sports? And B, if you're Ben Johnson, how are you supposed to build a program right now?
Yeah, and thanks for having me, Mike. I think from a fan's perspective, it's probably never been harder to be a fan right now in terms of your emotional investment, because it's almost by the week. It almost feels like everybody walks on eggshells wondering, okay, who's leaving next?
Yeah.
If you have a good player, a good young promising talent that's a freshman or sophomore, if a team gets a good recruit, what's the first reaction now? Well, how much is it going to take to keep him? And when is he transferring? Or she transferring? That's the kind of default setting now. And I don't blame fans for being frustrated. I always say that the transfer portal swings both way, the door.
Of course.
But we tend to remember the people that left more than the guys that came in. And so if you follow a team with your emotions, you're going to run the gamut in today's college sports, because there's just so much turnover, and it's to be expected. But every time it happens, it's still kind of a jolt to your system. As far as coaching and Ben Johnson, or really any coach, but particularly coaches that don't have, let's say, the greatest NIL collective situation. And the Gophers are far better than they were a year ago at this time. But the basketball is still trailing in this market. It's almost – they're feeling the pain of the mid-majors, where it's a – you're stuck in this spot of, if you recruit really well or develop guys young in their career and they show promise – you run the risk of a school with a deep pockets or big boosters coming and taking that talent and giving them massive NIL deals. Bucky Irving in football. We saw that a couple years ago with Oregon. Pharrell Payne hasn't come out and said his reasoning publicly for leaving, and it might be multiple reasons. But I'm going to go out on a limb and say he's probably going to get a pretty nice NIL deal from some school wherever he signs.
Six figures for sure. For sure.
He was going to get six here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I report and I had people tell me he was going to get six figures from Dinkytown athletes here. But the other thing is, Ben Johnson, with their NIL situation, and it's a lot better than it was, but they are not going to outbid blue blood programs. And so for transfers in the portal. You run a risk of losing the guys that, you know, that are, have done something meaningful for you, significant, either proved, but you're not going to be able to replace them with these high-level guys that are in the portal, because you're just not going to be able to offer them enough money. And so I don't know how you build a program when you're constantly, every season, you're having to bring in six, seven new transfers. Now, I know Ben came out and said this week that he feels, knock on wood, reasonably confident, because I don't think you can ever be fully confident, that Dawson Garcia, Elijah Hawkins, and Cam Christie will return.
Okay.
And Mike Mitchell, his dad, told Marcus Fuller over
Yep.
paper, is going to come back. So we know that. And Elijah Hawkins said before the, I think in the Big Ten
Big Ten
tournament, that he was
tournament, I
going to
think,
come
yeah.
back. Now, let's wait and see. I mean, Ferrell Payne, obviously, was told Marcus he can't wait to get everybody back too.
Then, yeah, then next
So
week you lose.
I always, until that portal window closes, you never know who's going to be there. But if they can, if this is it and they've lost five, and I would really say the only big loss is Ferrell Payne. The other guys were either minor role players in the rotation or not in the rotation at all. But it's still five players that you have to replace and find new guys in the portal. So I know this is where we are in college sports. It's just for old guys like me that are used to a certain thing, it's taken some getting used to, and I'm still not used to all the turnover.
And you don't begrudge necessarily a player for going after a life-changing amount of money. It's not the players that broke the
No.
system. And we're not even necessarily saying the system is broken, but if you open this up to a point where there's very little regulation to it, it's essentially we cavalierly toss around phrases like the Wild West, but it feels kind
It
of
is the
like
Wild
that right
West.
now.
Yeah. Yeah. And you say the system's not broken. I will say this. I've long supported NIL. I mean, I went back one time, I think for 10 years, I've been writing the Olympic model, which to me is kind of the NIL,
Yeah. Pay
that
the players.
athlete,
You get the players played through this funding, yeah.
the athletes deserve to be compensated. NIL was not meant to be pay for play. NIL was not meant for rich
Exactly.
schools to poach and illegally tamper with players on another roster and have go through intermediaries, or just flat out, have collectives call them and say, here's what we would offer you. That's not what this was meant for. And so there has to be, I don't know what the solution is to it, because you're never going to be able to crack down on all the tampering and all the things that are going on right now with schools contacting athletes on different at different schools and saying, here's what we have to offer. I guess you could try to turn schools in, but NCAA is just not going to be able to, it's so widespread. But this is not what NIL was meant to be, right? It was not meant to be pay for play.
Right.
And so, again, I don't know what, how you control it. I do think that NIL should move in back into athletic departments and let them control it. And that gives them a little more control over it, but there's always going to be tampering and different rules. I mean,
Right.
schools are always going to find a way to break rules. But I think if you moved it back inside, if you move it inside athletic departments and let them handle fundraising, because the whole thing is like you're asking fans to subsidize NIL, these collectives. I don't know that fundraising that way can keep up with the costs. I think you're going to put too much of this burden on fans at most schools, not all the schools. I mean,
Yeah.
there's schools that have these billion-dollar boosters that don't care. They'll just give money and that's fine. But I'd say at most schools, I like to joke that NIL stands for nothing is left. I mean, at
Yeah.
some point, these, fans are going to be like, I can't give anymore, right? I mean, this
Well,
is,
at the
and
U,
maybe.
they've already funded the athletes' village. They're paying in special seat license kind of things for the right to buy tickets. The tickets are already more expensive than they used to be. Like, there's a lot they're paying for already.
And the thing is, though, Mike, there's this understanding that if you're a fan and you don't contribute to these collectives, some school's gonna come and pay those athletes money. Darius Taylor, we're at a point where Darius Taylor was a true freshman last year and played how many games? He was great when he was on the field, but he was hurt a lot, but he was great. And it became big news when he announced on Twitter that
Yeah.
after talking to his family, he's gonna come back for one more year to be with Dinkytown Athletes. So we're at a point where it's almost as the news is almost as important when a player or an athlete says they're coming back to school as it is when they're leaving. What does that say about where we're at?
Oh, love it. It used to be, you get players transferring if a team was struggling or if they didn't have the playing time they wanted. And, you understood that, and that's part of the transfer portal now. It's like it's easier to move if you don't like your situation, and you don't want to begrudge an athlete for saying, hey,
I thought I was getting into one thing, but then it just didn't work out here. I want to go somewhere else. Like those are always going to be like natural. I want to improve my situation. But some of the stuff with the Gophers basketball team just felt, it feels different because this was a team that was improving. This is a team that you look at and you say, okay, if this isn't going to keep you here, if you're not going to stay at this point, when can you keep people here? And if the answer is raise more money, it's always going to be more and more and more.
Yes. And it, you know what's interesting is like as I watched that team, particularly in the middle of the season when they were up middle of the pack in the Big Ten and kind of playing well, now they fell apart completely at the end of the year. And some of that might have been all this, tied to what
Who
we're talking
knows?
about. But you watch some of those games and the way they perform, you're like, and I remember tweeting this out, I was like, this team has a kind of a collective spirit about them. You can tell that there's good chemistry, they like being together. They seem to get along, there's a good vibe. And you're thinking, man, if they could keep this together, that's something to build on. Well, naive me, because even if a team looks like they love being together and having fun and they're building towards something, that's not enough anymore. I mean, there's a financial component to this that, all these guys, all the five that left, I'm not going to say they're all NIL related. Some of them are playing
No,
time.
they may not. Yeah,
Obviously,
right.
guys that
Exactly.
weren't playing want to go find a
Right.
place where they can play. But there are some of them that clearly, I think, there's a financial component to this. And so, yeah, I agree with you that I don't know that there's ever going to be enough money.
Yeah.
Not
And
in Minnesota. Now, maybe, some
no,
of these big
right.
schools where they have endless supplies, their boosters are, willing to fund this. But I had two people connected to college athletics that would know, told me that for a high major basketball program, a high major basketball program needs a minimum of $1 million a year to distribute to their roster. I mean, the
Jeez.
Gophers are not in that spot.
No.
They're just not.
And again, like the players didn't make this system. Like if I was, 19, 20, 21 years old and someone said, "Hey, we'll give you this much money to come play basketball here instead of the school you're at," and it was like considerably more, like if it was again like life-changing, like I would probably do the same thing. Like that is a big deal to a person. And again, it's the system that feels like it got way out of hand, way, way too fast.
That's it. Yeah. I mean, if things are close, if the money's, if the, the financials are close and they choose just a little bit more, and they're just like, really? I mean, but if it's significant to where it's like, okay, this is,
Right.
it's just like us in a job. If somebody offered
Yeah.
you, triple your money or quadruple your salary,
Yeah.
it's
You're
going to be
like,
hard to say
no,
no to
sorry.
that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Love
Yeah.
you. But,
Right.
hope our bosses don't listen to
I think they would under if someone Chip, if someone offered us
this.
four times what we're
No.
making, I think our bosses might understand. They'd be like,
That's
okay,
right.
we can't match that. I'm sorry. We like you guys too, but
That's right. Yeah, but it, yeah, but there's, I don't know, and I don't begrudge the athletes. I,
no.
it is the system, and it feels like NIL came about, and because there's so many lawsuits, and how's this going to work, and different states had different laws and different things like that. And it came about, and it's like we went from 0 to 150 like this with no idea of how to manage it. And then, if there's basically no rules and everybody can do kind of whatever they want to do, that the schools that have there's always people that cut corners, right? They're gonna, find ways to find loopholes or find ways to do things illegally or tamper or whatever. And so, we just went from no NIL to the Wild West. And it is the Wild West when you hear, like, what schools are offering athletes, what, athletes are jumping from here to here to here to here
Yeah.
and saying, I got these different offers. It's just, it's hard. You talk to people that are in that business, and I asked someone when I was doing my column, I said, where do you think this will be in 3 years from now?
Yeah.
And this person said, I can't think 3 years from now. I can only look as far as the next transfer portal window. Like, we
Yeah.
have to keep the roster together. Like,
Yeah.
that's literally what the whole focus is, just keeping
Yeah.
your roster together.
Yeah.
That's a hard way. That must be an exhausting way to live.
Royal Credit Union Smart Checking accounts offer no monthly fees and no minimum balance. Enjoy financial freedom when you open your Royal Credit Union Smart Checking account online at rcu.org/gochecking. Insured by NCUA.
You know, transitioning to some women's basketball stuff, it was even kind of jarring on Monday, even though I'm sure I've seen it before, like in the middle of a college basketball game, seeing a Caitlin Clark commercial.
A lot of, yeah.
It was like, what was it? I think it was the insurance, or State I can't
Farm,
remember what it was,
yeah.
State Farm. I was like, yeah, this, okay, of course they can do this now, but like what? Like, it's,
yeah.
I'm sure she and Paige Beckers are going to play on Friday. Their teams are going to play Iowa and UConn. It's going to be very highly anticipated here and everywhere. Both of them are probably doing just fine in their NIL deals
yeah,
as well,
because they're doing fine.
They're pretty popular players, and women athletes have done very well in NIL as well, as I think a Star Tribune study showed, and national studies have shown. But Monday night's basketball was great. What's your kind of takeaway as we kind of think about these two players and what we hopefully will see Friday night and what we did see Monday?
Yeah, we are at a undeniable moment in women's basketball, but I think women's sports and the broad appeal of these athletes. And I'll put in there Angel Reese, Juju Watkins. I mean, that Elite Eight, those two games Monday night were fabulous. You had this star power. It lived up to the hype. We're seeing players, play the way, I mean, you look at the way Caitlin Clark plays and the shot she takes. We haven't seen that before. And it's this marriage of great talent, unique talent, the way they play, their skill sets, creativity, shot making, all that, social media, NIL, and this understanding that women's sports are fun, entertaining, highly competitive. And so you're seeing, between Paige Beckers and Caitlin Clark, they are spokespeople for Nike, Gatorade, State Farm, Buick. I mean, these are massive national brands. And you're seeing these commercials, and you see, their popularity. And this is just a moment. And I think I'm glad that people that might have been non-fans or just didn't pay attention are giving it a chance, because they've heard of Caitlin Clark or they've heard of Paige, and they're kind of seeing what the buzz is about and the headlines and leading Sports Center and on these different things. And then you watch them like, holy cow, I mean, they're incredible. Like when you watch, it is hard not to watch Caitlin Clark and not be entertained with the shots that she makes. And so it's fabulous, this moment. And we obviously know a lot about Paige. I think about it, I think about this a lot. I saw her last spring. She was doing an NIL deal at a food shelf at her middle school that she went to in Hopkins. And I, after all the thing was done, I was talking to her in the hall, one-on-one there. I was like, and she had flown in just for this, and it was, raising all these, doing this great charity work. And I was like, man, Caitlin is like, Paige. I was like, I remember the first time I had talked to you, you're an eighth grade little girl and your dad was there, and I was interviewing after practice, and she kind of laughed. She's like, I can't believe, this was, not too long ago.
Yeah, 7 years ago, probably.
And to see the platform that she has now and the women's athletes have now, and there's just this anticipation for, those elite games and now this Friday night Final Four. And I'd say there's some people that are as excited for this as they are the men's tournament. When's the last time we talked about it, said that? Yeah. And so it's just this, this perfect storm of things that are happening, and it's a moment. And I think it's just going to springboard to even more and more interest and following into the women's game.
And I think the women's game has been growing and getting better, every year for quite some time, but it's felt for a while like those who were super invested in the game had to try to talk other people into getting invested, or give this a try, watch this, see this is actually really good. You're going to like this. It's not tokenism. You're going to like this because it's a really good, the action is really good. And I think it has been for a while. It's at another level now. And You're not having to convince people anymore. People are just
No.
finding this and they're like, yeah, okay, I want to watch this. You don't have to tell me, like, all these NBA guys, like
Yeah.
KG, all, I mean, again, women's basketball doesn't need their validation. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, like, you see all these NBA guys tweeting about the women's tournament, like they're just into the games as they should be.
Yeah.
But this feels different too.
Yeah, and Gino Auriemma, the UConn's Hall of Fame coach, said last night after the Monday night after the win to get him to the Final Four, someone asked him about just the significance of that night and having these such star power on display on TV, and I'm sure the TV numbers are going to be just astronomical. And he said these women have kind of dragged people into the 21st century in terms of
Yeah.
understanding that they're great athletes, just unique talent, fun personalities. They play with confidence. The product is really good. And so, yeah, it's not like they have to convince you
No.
that, hey, this is good. No, it's like, just turn on a game and watch Paige Bueckers plays. Watch Caitlin Clark play. Watch Juju Watkins, the shot making that they do is like, this is high level basketball. And so it's fun, it's entertaining, and I mean, last night Iowa and LSU, top two scoring teams in the country. I
Yeah.
mean, they're averaging 90 points a game,
Yeah.
I mean, it is great fun.
I'm sure I'll watch, a lot of the men's Final Four in the championship game. I know I'm gonna watch Friday night.
I gotta imagine, I think this, if I'm wrong, I apologize, but I think the LSU Iowa championship game last year was the most watched.
I do believe that's correct,
I
yeah.
think it was 9.9 million, right? I have to imagine UConn Iowa Paige versus Caitlin on Friday night's going to blow past that, right? It's going to be 10
Yeah.
million plus, I would
Gotta be.
guess. When you
Yeah.
talk about probably the two most, Caitlin for sure, and Paige and UConn's following, and I think people remember, 2021, Paige was the first freshman to be National Player of the Year and won all these major awards and went to the Final Four. And I was there in San Antonio that night. They lost in the semifinals, but you're thinking, okay, this is going to be a run of four of these for her, and then things happened. She got there the next year and they lost to South Carolina in the championship game, but then
Injuries
obviously
and
had his
stuff, yeah.
injuries all that year and then missed all of last season. But she wasn't at obviously at Caitlin's in terms of widespread
Right.
national at the point, but I mean, it's Paige Bueckers. Everybody
Yeah.
knew and loved her. She had a huge following, social media and all that. So it's not like she's unknown. It's just she's had a different road because of injuries. But this will be the rematch, your first time they played since in that 2021 tournament. UConn knocked out Iowa in the Sweet 16, and they haven't played again. But
Wow.
they used, I was texting with Paige's dad today and their AAU coach. They used to play against each other in AAU in high
I
school, and
bet.
they know each
Yeah.
other well. And they played on the USA basketball U19 team that won a World Cup or World title. So they know each other well. And that matchup, I hope they guard each other because
Yeah.
that could be a ton of fun.
Well, final point on this, like NIL is kind of, Paige is coming back for another year. Like, this is,
Yeah.
she probably wants to, play with her friends, compete again like this, but like, probably makes it easier for some players to come back for another year. You don't have to start your earning clock in the WNBA, things like that. Like,
Sure.
that is, one of the differences in how there's tons of women's players in the transfer portal. I'm not saying there isn't.
Yeah.
This is the difference between the women's game and the men's game. You stick around, you might still make a lot of money there, and you don't have all these one and dones in the women's game. It feels like it's had a much more detrimental impact on the men's game so far, even if there are a lot of transfers in both cases.
Yeah, and I think I still think competitors at the highest level still want to play against the best competition in the world,
Yeah.
WNBA.
Yeah.
What I hope this does, and I think it might, I haven't seen the data yet, but I think it might, because a lot of women that go to WNBA play overseas in the off season because that's how they make more money there,
Yeah.
or and that's how they play year round basically. I wonder if NIL, because I saw one national writer was like, well, why is Caitlin going to the WNBA? Because she's going to lose her NIL. She's going to not make as much. Well, Nike and Gatorade are still going to sponsor her.
Yeah.
And
she's still going to get endorsements as a pro. Yeah.
It doesn't stop when she leaves
no.
Iowa. She's still going to be a very, very marketable athlete. But I wonder for, you know, as a these women players sign contracts with marketing and endorsement things, if that will entice some of them not to go play in Europe and just have their WNBA season and be able to rest and recover and work out and not have to go do that or want to go do that as much. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see if there's that data. But, yeah, I mean, Paige is coming back, and, you know, I haven't seen the financials on her reported lately, but I think she was at like 1 million reportedly, her NIL, all
valuation.
The different things that she has. Yeah. So I got to imagine that's only going to continue to grow, and it should. And she's such a great spokesperson for any company, and the way she carries herself and conducts herself, all class. And so I just, you know, just kind of wrap up. I just, it's such a cool moment. And I'm glad that the recognition that's getting, especially having known Paige all these years and see, you know, how she's handled the pressure of being, and Caitlin, I think's in the same spot, the pressure of being in that spotlight when so many young kids are looking up to them, and to do it so gracefully, so with so much confidence, and still be able to perform at a high level. That's, I can't imagine that's easy, and they do it so, they make it look easy, and they do it with such class. So it's cool. I'm just, it's fun to watch, and I'm hoping for just a, it'd be great to see a close, competitive, high scoring game on Friday night where those two just kind of light it up.
Absolutely. That'll be a fun game. Chip, you'll have a column later this week on those two players in just a moment as well. Appreciate all the insights today. We'll talk again soon.
All right, brother.
Great stuff from Chip, and it leads us right into the cooler. We had been talking about TV viewership, things like that for women's basketball. One minor correction, the 1983 NCAA title game between Southern Cal and Louisiana Tech had the record for largest TV audience for a women's game. That was the championship game, 1983, 11.8 million viewers. That was broken, we found out not long after Chip and I recorded, by Iowa's win over LSU in the Elite Eight, 12.3 million viewers on ESPN. Most watched women's college basketball game in history. Yeah, the Iowa-LSU game last year had big numbers, but not as big as this. So they have set that record. Makes it, reading from the story here, the AP story, makes it one of the most viewed games in any sport other than the NFL in the last year. It outdrew, reading straight from the story, all but one of the five games in last year's NBA Finals, along with the clinching game of last year's World Series. That's amazing. It's also the most watched men's or women's college basketball game ever on ESPN. That is amazing. Setting huge numbers. And like we said, I would imagine this record will stand for maybe a couple more days. I could very easily see that Friday game between UConn and Iowa surpassing that one. Now, maybe Monday versus Friday is a different thing. I don't know exactly how that works for TV audience, but I have to imagine this will be a very anticipated game, this Friday game between UConn and Iowa, like Chip and I talked about. So we'll see what the TV numbers are for that, but very impressive that they have set that record right now. That will do it for me today. Tony Kennedy from the Star Tribune, outdoors writer, will join me on Thursday show to talk about deer hunting, Big Ten power rankings, and deer hunting. I can't wait to talk to Tony about that. That'll be on Thursday's show. Until then, I am Michael Rand. Have a great rest of your Wednesday. Back at it again tomorrow.